The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Wednesday, March 10th, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me, and there's no other place to start this episode than with what happened Tuesday night in Las Vegas inside Orleans Arena. Final score, Gonzaga 88, BYU 78, but it was not easy. The top-ranked and undefeated Zags were down by as many as 14 points by definition on the ropes. Their undefeated record at real risk for the first time this season. Their chance at history slipping away like your morals sometimes do in Sin City. But Gonzaga outscored BYU 47-25 in the second half. Corey Kispert made four threes. Jalen Suggs made four threes. The Zags ended up shooting 50.9% from the field. They won by double digits, so they are just the 20th team in history. And Gonzaga is just the 16th school in history to enter the NCAA tournament with a zero in the loss column. Dead leg. Did you ever think, even for a minute, that Gonzaga was taking a loss Tuesday night?
I thought about it. I thought it was certainly on the table. I didn't think it was going to happen. I dropped a poll. Did you vote in the poll when I dropped it?
I have not voted in any poll lately.
Okay, no polls. I asked Twitter, hey, how's this going to end? When it was halftime, 53-41, and BYU was up and shooting 70% from three-point range and just out of its mind. I said, okay, let's predict how this is going to end here. And I said BYU is going to win. Gonzaga will win by 1-5. Gonzaga will win by 6-10, or Gonzaga will win by 11+. And had about 1,100 people responding in about 10 minutes before I closed the poll, so we couldn't have people sneaking in. 12 minutes to go in the second half, and the plurality of voters won. 35% was the largest contingent. That was 6-10 points. It was 10 points indeed. So congrats, congrats on that. I thought it would wind up. I said this in Slack. I got evidence. I thought they were going to win by 9. They won by 10. They got it done. Undefeated. Great on BYU to make it close. Weirdly, I think BYU's now, it would have almost been better if it got roasted by 35, Parrish. Have a chance to maybe dip down to the 10 line. I think it kind of locked itself in the 8-9, which is not an ideal place. I mean, all the 4-1 seeds are going to be really, really good. Now, they're not going to face Gonzaga. We know that's not going to be where they're at. But now I think they for sure are going to be in that 8-9. Well, not for sure, but I think that's where they'll land. And potentially they're going to be a nightmare situation for another 1-seed caliber team in the second round if they can win a game. So we'll wait and see on that. The big picture is that Gonzaga will enter the NCAA tournament as the 20th team in history with an undefeated record. This quite obviously is a great thing for college basketball, for the NCAA tournament. It becomes the biggest story. The tournament returning itself after a two-year break is a huge deal, and there's going to be so much interest, excitement around all of that. But you add in an undefeated Gonzaga team trying to, do what hasn't been done in 45 years, big-time stuff. I actually, the tournament would have been fine without it, Parrish, but it's in a way better spot, obviously, clearly, by having Gonzaga have a bagel in the loss column still.
There's no question. I mean, that'll be, Gonzaga is the story of this NCAA tournament. Other stories might emerge. In fact, I'm certain they will. But heading in, Gonzaga being undefeated with a chance to finish 32-0, to be an undefeated national champion, first one since 1976, that is the dominant story entering this NCAA tournament. Real quick on BYU, isn't it statistic? It's interesting the way the bracket works. Like, obviously, if you're an 8-seed or a 9-seed, you have a better chance of winning your first game in the NCAA tournament. But isn't it true that if you're a 10 or 11 or 12, you actually have a better shot of going to the Sweet 16 from there than you do from the 8-9 because you avoid that one seed. It's not impossible, but it is uncommon for the winner of the 8-9 game to actually get to the Sweet 16. When you start there, you're basically playing for one win, and then it's time to go home.
Yeah, I mean, every so often we do have an 8 or 9 pull off an upset, which makes the tournament a lot of fun. I don't have the data in front of me right now. Our listeners are incredible. If you want to get back to GP and I on this, by no means am I assigning homework, but I'd actually specifically be curious, what's the success rate on getting to the Sweet 16 if you are an 8 or a 9 or a 10? Like a 7 seed, obviously, you know, there's a difference, but if you'd rather be a 10 or an 8 or 9, which of those has a better success rate? I'm inclined to say the 10, but the 10's got to beat the 7, too. We're allowing room
for both. Ain't nobody scared of a 7. Ain't nobody scared of a 7.
I know. I'm just saying. Like, because you know that the 7-10 combo is, without a doubt, more successful than the 8-9. We know that. I'm curious, specifically, if you are the 10 seed, are you more likely to get through? You bring up an interesting query there. They are a good team. They played loose. Gonzaga did its thing. I'm just going to jump in right now and say that, you know, Jalen Suggs can be. You made a. I don't think you've made this point on the podcast, so maybe you made it on your radio show. But your analogy from Tuesday night, I hadn't thought about it specifically, but it's right on. Jalen Suggs is not as athletic as Derrick Rose was at Memphis. He's awesome. He's a wonderful player. He's plenty athletic. Like, Derrick Rose is one of the three or four freakiest college basketball players I think I've ever seen. He was just insane. But because he deferred to Memphis for most of that regular season and everyone knew that he was the dude, and then tournament time came and he took over, I can see you made the case that, like, we could well see this with Jalen Suggs. Like, once it means something in the tournament and everything's on the line, like, Corey Kispert's been awesome. He got him back in the game on Tuesday night. Drew Timmy has been, at worst, a second-team All-American. Andrew Nembhard, Joel Ayayi, these are wonderful, really good players that, on their own, any of those dudes can't be the guy in a game. But Suggs showed us in a big moment when an undefeated season was on the line why he needs to go in the top three of this year's NBA draft and why he is just simply that dude. He might be my favorite player to watch in college basketball this season, and I love your analogy. I think there is a good chance we could look up by the time we get to the Final Four and say, in either one or two games prior to that, you know, Gonzaga really won this because Suggs decided it was his team and he was taking over.
Right. I didn't mean to compare Jalen Suggs to Derrick, because I got a lot of in my mentions like, well, you know, D. Rose was more athletic. Like, yes, I know D. Rose is more athletic. D. Rose is more athletic than 99.99999% of humans ever. I got it. What I meant is that if you go back and watch that 2007-2008 Memphis team, Chris Douglas Roberts was the star of the team. Chris Douglas Roberts was the first team All-American. Derrick Rose, this is crazy, and it was crazy in real time. I said it in real time, but it's even crazier with the benefit of hindsight, but it happened. There were Memphis fans debating in December whether Andre Allen or Derrick Rose should be the starting point guard. That's how not unbelievable Derrick Rose was from the jump. And it obviously wasn't, it had nothing to do with his ability. He just sort of deferred to the upperclassmen. Like, he just sort of, he didn't come in and try to be the guy. He was joining an Elite Eight team that returned four starters. And he was just like, I'll just be a part of this team. But when the NCAA tournament came, he flipped a switch. I think because Cal told him it's time to go. Like, you're the most talented dude in this country. Go be that guy. And he ran through every point guard they put in front of him. It was, if I remember, it was Michigan State, I believe, with Drew Neitzel. He just destroyed him.
Poor Drew Neitzel.
Ooh. Then it was Texas with DJ Augustine, just destroyed him. Then it was UCLA with Darren Collison, I hope I'm getting these right, just destroyed him. If you go back and look at Derrick's NCAA tournament run, game by game, he put together one of the great individual NCAA tournaments in modern history. He destroyed people. And so when I mentioned Jalen Suggs in the same sentence with Derrick Rose last night, what I mean is that I could easily envision Suggs being the dominant player for Gonzaga on this NCAA tournament run, even if he hasn't been the dominant player for Gonzaga all season, and for the exact same reason, because he's kind of deferred to the – I don't even know if it's intentional, but, like, he's just sort of fit in as opposed to you know, taken over. But last night, when they needed him to take over, he took over. He's clearly capable. I think we could look up after the Final Four, same way we looked up after the 2008 Final Four. Only difference being Gonzaga's a champ, Memphis was not. And we say not only is Jalen Suggs the most talented guy on that team, he was the main reason they won a national championship. He was the main reason they won six games in this bracket. And he's now got to be in the conversation for number one overall pick in the 2021 NBA draft. I'm predicting that type of performance from him.
He is a stud. By the way, what Gonzaga pulled off was the third best comeback after halftime since Mark Few took over. Credit to ESPN for this. I did see it on their stats and info page. 12-point come-from-behind win. The only two that were bigger. In 2000, they came back from 13 down to beat Pepperdine, and in 01, a 16-point halftime deficit. Otherwise, all things considered, an impressive rally. I did think they were going to pull out the win, Parrish, but, you know, BYU did make it genuinely interesting. There's no doubt about it. And when I went on HQ late Tuesday night after the game, I got asked, you know, as would be a natural question for this kind of thing, like, was this what something Gonzaga needed? Well, Mark Few answered that, because his answer probably means the most, and he said, yes, we needed this. We acknowledged the undefeated season in the locker room afterward, but getting this kind of push was something that was better for us. And I agree, because Gonzaga has scratches on its skin now, and maybe those will still be fresh when it gets to the tournament, because remember, they're done Tuesday night. They're sitting until at least next Friday, Parrish. Like, they still have a longer wait than most other teams are going to play on Saturday and Sunday of this weekend here. And so having your most recent game be a truly urgent situation against a team that's going to be in the NCAA tournament, I think does benefit them, and they can say they got a real challenge, because they had not received one since they played Iowa. I mean, Virginia didn't even give them a game the day after Christmas. It had been that long since they got a true push.
Yeah, no, I think it was important, and Mark, like you said, acknowledged as much. You know, you get into that NCAA tournament setting, like, game pressure is a real thing, and they got to feel some game pressure last night. It wasn't the same type of game pressure. Like, if they would have lost to BYU in the West Coast Conference tournament title game, their season wouldn't have been over. They would have still been a one seed. They would have lost the chance at history being undefeated national champions, but everything else still in play. So it wasn't the same type of game pressure, but it was undeniable game pressure. And you want to know how your guys will respond, who you can rely on. And then you also want that experience under your belt, if you will, so that if you find yourself in a similar situation in the round of 32, Sweet 16, at any point in the bracket, you can point back to that. We've been here before. We were down double digits to a top 25 KenPom team, and we won by double digits. We're fine. Relax. I think anytime you can point to something from your past as an example of, we've been in this spot before and we were fine. Relax. I think that is incredibly beneficial. And now Gonzaga's got that thing.
Couple quick questions for you before we move along. One, second round Sweet 16 Elite Eight. When will Gonzaga get its next game where it looks up with 5 minutes to go and it's in a single-digit game? Second round, Sweet 16, because we know that's not happening in the first round. Which of those rounds do you think is most likely that like, do we go until the Elite Eight before there's 5 minutes to go and it's a single-digit margin?
My official answer is I don't know. You know, I it could come as early as the round of 32. I think if I had to pick one, I would say Sweet 16. But I did think this was interesting. Now, BYU is unranked in the AP poll, but I have BYU in the top 25 and one, and BYU was 24th at KenPom yesterday morning. The Cougars are now 23rd. They moved up a spot even after a loss last night. Gonzaga was a 14-point favorite over a top 25 KenPom team. Mm-hmm. They're going to be a double-digit favorite, obviously, in the round of 64, clearly in the round of 32. I think also in the Sweet 16.
Probably, yes.
They will not be projected to win by fewer than double digits again until at least the Elite Eight, which is obviously unusual. That's how good this team is. Like, they will be in a Sweet 16 game and be projected to win it by 15 points, which again is just outrageous. But you know, it is the It's the resume they put together.
Yep. As a heads up, I'll put this in the pod description. I had a piece go up on Wednesday detailing the 20 teams that have gone to the tournament, started it undefeated, and where they ended. Seven have finished the season with an undefeated record. But a lot of those came well before the modern era, before a 64-team tournament, back when the tournament was 23-team fields and 25-team fields and et cetera, et cetera. There have been four previous to Gonzaga since seeding began to enter the tournament, NCAA tournament undefeated. Indiana State, it lost in the title game. UNLV lost in the Final Four when it was, you know, probably the best team in America that season. And then Wichita State lost in the second round to a Kentucky team that, you know, that's just a brutal draw. And then Kentucky lost in the Final Four. What I'm getting at here is ISU, UNLV, and Kentucky all made at least the Final Four. Had Wichita State been given maybe any other 8 or 9 team in the second round, it's almost certainly going to at least a Sweet 16 and probably like the Elite Eight. It didn't get challenged much in that regular season. It was a good team. Gonzaga clearly sets up to repeat the pattern here. Last question for you. Are All-Americans, our Players of the Year, Coach of the Year, we do that after the Elite Eight and before the Final Four starts. So we will have some tournament play that will influence our voting here. But if we had to submit a first and second and third team All-American team today to our bosses for CBSSports.com, I would have Corey Kispert at first team for sure. And I don't know if I would get Timmy or Suggs on my first team, but are we in agreement that those three are unquestionably first or second team? I mean, Gonzaga has three of the 10 most important and best players in college basketball right now. Agree?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think Kispert probably goes first team. I think definitely goes first team.
Yeah.
Although, if you go by the KenPom Player of the Year ratings,
I know
Kispert's not top 10. Timmy is number 2. Jalen Suggs is number 10. But Corey Kispert is widely regarded as that team's best player. Is that fair?
Yeah.
He's the West Coast Conference Player of the Year.
And Mark Few will tell you that Corey Kispert is their most important player. So,
okay.
Yes.
So then the Corey Kispert will by default be first team All-American. And then I think, yeah, Drew Timmy and Jalen Suggs are both probably second team All-Americans. Like three Zags.
Suggs might have been here or there, but after what he did on Tuesday night, it's not arguable. He saved their undefeated season, basically. You know, not single-handedly, but he was the one that really put on top. Those three-pointers there, it was just like, okay, it's game, it's done. Suggs decided it. So we'll keep that in mind going forward, our All-American teams. Some have come out this week because it's only regular season. We find that great. We split that balance between allowing the tournament to matter some, not be everything, but also give reference to the regular season.
And the reason we do that is to avoid mistakes. Like 2011, who's you look back on that 10 years later,
Kemba's
the star. Kemba was not the National Player of the Year. If you would have voted on that, even heading into the Final Four, who would have been the National Player of the Year? Kemba Walker.
Yeah, even heading into the Final Four before they even win the title, Kemba Walker. Yes.
Yeah, Kemba Walker was the Player of the Year that year, even though he was not technically the Player of the Year that year. That's because too often I think people vote too early for this stuff. We're in charge of it. We can vote whenever we want. So we vote, like you said, after the Elite Eight, before the Final Four. I think that allows us to more properly reflect who actually mattered in any given season.
Yeah.
And if the Zags do go all the way to the Final Four, it's going to be because Drew Timmy, Corey Kispert, Jalen Suggs have all been awesome or at least very good. And so I think at the end of the day, when we make those teams, yes, we're going to have three Zags on those teams, which will be unusual, but also deserving. Let's move on. Just on the wrong side of the bubble with zero games to play is no place to be 4 days before Selection Sunday, but that's where St. Louis finds itself. Our Billikens, first team out right now, according to Jerry Palm. Dead leg doesn't give them much of a chance to make the field. Can the master of ceremonies of A10 Media Day pre-pandemic change his mind? We'll see next. But first, Norlander, tell the folks about LinkedIn Jobs.
Thank you, Parrish. Things are looking up better by the week. Tournament starts next week. 2021 has been good so far, and new beginnings mean new opportunities to grow your business. If part of your strategy is adding new members to your team, LinkedIn Jobs finds the right person quickly. To make things better, your first job post is free. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 722 million members worldwide. Getting started is easier than ever with new features to help you find qualified candidates quickly. Post a job job with targeted screening questions, and LinkedIn will quickly get your role in front of more qualified candidates. You can manage job posts and contact candidates from a single view on the familiar LinkedIn.com, as the functions are streamlined onto one simple screen. And now you can do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. And now you can post a job for free. Just visit LinkedIn.com/I. Again, that's LinkedIn.com/I to post a job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, my dead-arm compadre. St. Louis, bubble team. What do you got for me here?
So St. Louis is the first team out of the field right now, according to Jerry Pond. The Billikens have no games left. Their resume is their resume. Here's the resume. 2-2 in quadrant one, 2-2 in quadrant two, 4-2 quadrant three, 6-0 in quadrant four. So the Billikens are 14-6 overall, 4-4 in the first two quadrants, two additional losses falling in quadrant three. They're 37th in BPI, 45th in the net, 49th at KenPom, 56th Sagarin, 64th KPI, strength of record, 63rd. Norlander and I agree. On a surface level, that's not good enough. But here's the truth. If not for those two quadrant three losses, they'd be in the field, no problem. Those losses killed them. But does it matter, should it matter, that those losses came immediately after coming off of a COVID pause? Here's the deal. St. Louis beat UMKC on December 23rd, 2 days before Christmas, to improve to 7-1. They had wins over LSU and NC State, lone loss at Minnesota back when everybody was losing at Minnesota. Then the Billikens go on COVID pause. They went 23 days without a practice, 34 days between games. I'm told 11 of their 15 players tested positive for COVID. 11 in a five-day span. So 11 players test positive. They don't practice at all for 23 days. Then they practice four times, start back playing. They immediately take a quadrant three loss to Dayton, then immediately take a quadrant three loss to LaSalle. Undeniably, those losses are connected to that long COVID pause. They are not representative of St. Louis's basketball team. So here's my question. As the master of ceremonies of A10 Media Day pre-pandemic, will that matter enough to the selection committee to get the Billikens an at-large bid?
Unfortunately, those losses are representative of the St. Louis basketball team because they're going to be on the resume. They need to hope that because they only played 20 games, that this is some sort of saving grace, because they did not have the opportunity to, instead of being 14-6, be potentially, you know, 17-6, 18-6, and then I think it's a different situation. I do think that St. Louis is on the list of three or four teams that the committee will probably find the most intriguing and potentially difficult to seed. Does have two wins over NCAA tournament teams, has a win at home over LSU, has a win at home over St. Bonaventure. So that is certainly something. The LaSalle, if you flip the LaSalle loss to a win, this is way more compelling to me. Palms got him as the first team out. There are no more games. I don't expect the teams that are around them to lose enough to help their case. I won't say no chance, but I'm not seeing it. I'm just, listen.
We have Billiken belts, Norlander. We are the owners of Billiken belts.
We are indeed. But I just, I know this kind of breaks your heart as the pre-pandemic MC of A10 Media Day. I know it's not easy here. I understand that, but it's just not. I just now don't think it's going to happen. St. Louis is, I would think they're going to get a one seed in the NIT, and then their fate will be that they are going to be one of the four teams that, you know, is in the call up, if you will, hanging out in the bullpen.
How funny, how awesome would that be that the team that had 11 players test positive in a 5-day span gets all their COVID out of the way, and then it's sitting there on the Monday after Selection Sunday, and the NCAA is like, come on down, Billikens. We just had to kick Iowa out of the tournament or something like that.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. I mean, we'll wait and see if that happens. But I'm glad you bring up St. Louis because they only have 20 games. Like, a lot of these teams are going to be fortunate to get, including conference tournament play, there's going to be a lot of teams that are fortunate enough to get in 27, 28, 29 games. St. Louis is, its inventory just isn't as much there. And so I think it's pinned against it. And I know you agree with me. I mean, just it's not impossible. Tulsa at one time got into the tournament and nobody saw it coming.
That's the one.
So, you know, it's certainly on the table. I will never say that St. Louis has a 0% chance of getting into this NCAA tournament because I don't believe that. I just don't think it's likely. I'd put it around 10%.
It'll come down to interpretation. I, as much as it hurts me to say this as the master of ceremonies of A10 Media Day pre-pandemic, I too think it's unlikely that St. Louis is in. But you can make a compelling argument for them. I think I just sort of laid one out. And that Tulsa team is the one that always makes me stop short of speaking in absolutes. Because if you remember, Tulsa was in the AAC tournament, I guess it was, and they lost a game. And one of the players was on Twitter, and like somebody asked that player on Twitter, you can go back and find this.
Yeah.
Like, hey, are y'all in the NCAA tournament? And the player responded, no, we lost. Even a player at Tulsa, what it had given up hope that they were in the field. And then the bracket's like, and there's Tulsa, 12. It's like, what? How did nobody had Tulsa in? So I would never say never, but I would say unfortunately unlikely. And it really does come down to, I do think, like, sometimes things are excuses and sometimes things are explanations. I often, you know, as I'm explaining something to somebody, you know, either professionally or personally, I'll say, listen, that's not an excuse. It's just an explanation. And I would say that about St. Louis. The going 3 weeks without practicing, having 11 players test positive, and then come back and lose your next two games, which are two games unlike any other games you lost all season. That's an explanation. The COVID pause caused that. It's not an excuse, but it is an explanation. And so I do think you can point to that. But the problem, of course, for St. Louis, I think, is that everybody's got a story in this year about why they, you know, Duke's got a story. Kentucky's got a story. Everybody on the wrong side of the bubble can point to something.
Yep.
And that'll ultimately be the thing that probably works against them. But as always, we'll see. You know, they'll be nervous on Selection Sunday. They'll be waiting for their name. I've been surprised before. And as Master of Ceremonies, A10 Media Day pre-pandemic, I'd be thrilled to be surprised again. I would love to wear my Billiken belt.
Yeah, they got to root for everyone to lose here. I mean, you got to root for Duke not to do what it's not going to do, not win the SEC tournament. Like Syracuse plays NC State, they got to root for that. They got to root for Xavier to lose against Butler. These are Wednesday games. Like it's just they need every single result to go their way, like every single one, and then they're going to have a chance. But it's just a long shot, I'm afraid.
So I noticed this morning the Big East has named its Player of the Year. And there's three of them. We'll talk about that next, but first, check this out. Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBSSports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBSSports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
So the Big East announced its official Player of the Year earlier today, and it's three players. What are we doing? Can we just pick a Player of the Year? What are we doing?
Here was the reason. I mean, For the first time in league history, three players will share Big East Player of the Year honors. Seton Hall, Sandru Mamukelashvili, and the Villanova tandem of Jeremiah Robinson-Earl and Colin Gillespie tied in the voting by the league's head coaches who were not permitted to vote for their own players. You gotta run the vote back.
What you got to do is do a ballot of five. Give me your top five, and then we'll wait the votes, and then we'll have a clear winner. Like, stop it with this.
Change this
stuff
going forward. Also, like, yeah, I'm gonna go on a quick tangent here. Enough with the Big East having six players on the first team because one of them's the player of the year. Listen, we're recording this in real time, so I haven't caught. Like, are they gonna have eight players on this freaking first team? The Pac-12 puts out an all Pac-12 team and it's 10 dudes. Let's stop this. Stop. Like, just put five. Put five. What are we doing here? Why is it got to be this complicated? Three players of the year. Congrats to all three. You're going to get trophies. All deserved in their own regard, but it's just... James Booknight's not even one of the three. He's not even one of the three. Like, if I were to give it to someone, I think I would give it to Jeremiah Robinson-Earl narrowly over James Booknight, and he's not even in the top three. So, not a good look for them. This comes almost 1 year to the day after, and I say this lovingly, because God knows I can't wait to share this photo on the one-year anniversary, maybe to the minute. This comes after every other frickin' league tournament stopped playing. And what did the Big East say? It said, Creighton... St. John's, we're rolling the balls out and we're playing this damn tournament for 20 minutes. And then it stopped doing it. This isn't as bad as that, but it's just a weird, bizarre look. Three, you can't have to, if these are the results that come in, you go back to the coaches and you say, okay, now it's these three. We have a tie, vote in order, 1, 2, 3, and then you're going to get a player of the year. You can't have this.
Can't have three players of the year. It's ridiculous. And I'm with you on the first team's got eight players. What? Come what? On. Let's pick five people. And preferably, let's pick, you know, something that looks like a team. That used to be one of my sticklers. Like, let's have a primary ball handler. Then let's have, you know, another guard, a real wing. And then, you know, at least one true post player. You know, I know you can – defining.
We disagree on this, by the way, because modern era, as long as you got one forward, if you want to run a four guard line up there with one forward or center, I'm good with it.
Yeah. My rule was always, could you reasonably play with these five players? And of course, in modern basketball, the answer is almost always yes.
Oh, except for one. Yeah. I mean, did you see the Big Ten? The Big Ten is four bigs. It's four bigs and Io DeSumo. Which, by the way, is deserved because those are the five best players. You know, Coburn, Dickinson, Garza, DeSumo, and I think it was Travion Williams, or maybe it was Trayce Jackson-Davis. They're all willing. Like, it's unbelievable. The Big Ten is the exception to the rule, by the way. I don't know how successful that team would be, but your point is well taken.
We'll let Luka play two guard.
Oh, man, absolutely. Oh, and by the way, Biggie's got it right for freshman of the year, Posh Alexander. The podcast is torn on this. Listen, Golden Gate Mike got coach of the year. How is it not Dan Hurley? Golden Gate Mike, he did a good job, but like, what? How is it not Dan Hurley? First year in the league, they're third with Booknight not playing for what, 5-6 games. This is all coaches' votes, by the way. Every league does it differently. Some leagues combine media with coaches. I think the Big Ten actually specifically has, here's who won it on the media side, and here's who won it on the coaches' side. The Big East only does coaches' votes. And Golden Gate Mike, the legend continues to grow. If you needed any more motivation for the UConn Huskies to return to Madison Square Garden with a chip on their shoulder, I cannot wait to watch this team play in this tournament. I mean, they are going to be fired up. I would have given it to Hurley. That's all.
Golden Gate Mike did go out to the Bay Area and win that game.
That wasn't this season, though.
I know, but it carries over.
Apparently it does.
That carries over. You know what the 10-year anniversary of what incredible moment today is? 10-year anniversary?
Of course I do, because I was courtside at that game, covering it, uploaded the video to YouTube. In fact, I'm going to drop in the audio right here on this pod so you can hear the crowd from my phone, my 2009 era Android phone. This is what Madison Square Garden sounded like when Kemba Walker ended Gary McGee. That's just, I mean, that is chills, Paris. That was one of the, it wasn't one of the very first Big East tournament games I ever covered, and I had been to the building for, I had attended or whatever, but that was a true, in the moment, like, what we just saw, like, is instantly all-time legendary stuff. And again, this is before they win the national championship. It's before they even win the Big East tournament championship, but that was just, that was amazing, amazing stuff. Kemba Walker, 10 years ago to the day at the Garden, ending Gary McGee, buzzer beater, Huskies win.
I watched it this morning and I actually got chills. Because it's not just that first off, it's Kemba waving off the screen and Kemba just asking for space, and poor Gary McGee, he knows he's in trouble. He's got switched on Kemba, and now there's nobody. If you go back to that moment, there's got to be a way to undo that. there's got to be a way to undo that. But poor Gary McGee's there, and so and the buildup, like it didn't happen quickly. It was Kemba like waving off the screen, sizing up Gary McGee. Like you see it happening. Like you, here we go. You had that moment where you could say, "Here we go." And then he crosses him up. He falls down. He buries the shot. But the thing that actually gave me the chills when I watched it this morning, the crowd. Mm. Jam-packed Madison Square Garden, everybody on their feet. You don't get better than that. That is one of the all-time great championship week moments. And I would encourage anybody to go back and watch it because first it's just an incredible moment, but like it's striking the scene because it's been
so
long since we've seen that scene.
It absolutely is. No, I mean, when you bring up that stuff, just real quick, like we had, I don't know, man, last night, Tuesday night was just between all like the Gonzaga stuff, you know, Oral Roberts, shouts to Oral Bob, which by the way has maybe the weirdest statue on campus ever. That's going in the I'm just shoehorning this in because that's going in the no context preview. The massive pair of hands on campus. I don't know what's going on with that statue. No idea. Shouts to Kyle Boone Strongjaw bringing that up there. But between they blow a 25-point lead against North Dakota State, but they end up winning. You know, Drexel gets into the tournament for the first time since 96. Zach Spiker gets it done. Good on him. Cleveland State, it's amazing turnaround. Dennis Gates, they get the auto bid there as well. We just had, I mean, we had a run last night where just it was five leagues got into, got their auto bids. And we're just about at a year after the fact here. And, you know, to finally get to this point again, I am loving this right now, Parrish. I am so excited for the next few days of conference tournaments and then the return of the NCAA tournament. Like, it's just really feeling like, yeah, like the weather's getting nicer up here in the Northeast. Like, when you land, we're recording before GP's going to fly to New York City. When you land in New York City, it's going to be abnormally warm and good. Like, you're going to feel good getting off the plane, making your way to your hotel room. So it's been awesome. Tuesday was great. And now we enter in to just an amazing next few days. I'm not someone who believes that the conference tournament week is better than the first week of the NCAA tournament. There are some people who do think that because there's more games, there's more teams still that have their season alive and all that stuff. And I get that. I love this week for these very reasons. And no auto bids today. We'll have some more in the coming days. And if you want a little heads-up reminder on games to keep an eye on here coming up, I mean, plenty of people are going to be getting to this podcast Wednesday in the afternoon. So we're already going to be in bloom with some of the league tournaments there. Some of the games to watch Wednesday night, you know, Duke at Louisville is a 6:30 tip approximately. ACC Network, keep an eye on that. You've got Notre Dame, which won in dramatic fashion at the buzzer, come from behind. I mean, just great job by that team winning against Wake Forest. They're going to play North Carolina. That's a approximately 9 o'clock tip on ACC Network tonight. We wait and see if Minnesota, is the season going to flame out or not? That's a 6:30 tip on the Big Ten Network as well. There's not a ton on Wednesday in terms of compelling stuff because, you know, most of the games that matter for bubble teams, most of them will begin on Thursday. Here's a quick heads up and primer on it. We'll actually have games starting before noon Eastern in league tournament play. Oklahoma State will play West Virginia at 11:30 a.m. Mike Boynton, Cowboys coach, told me Tuesday that Cade Cunningham and Isaac Likely are both expected to play. Likely had been out with a foot and a hand issue as of late. Cunningham tweaked his ankle, but they've both been practicing this week. They should be good to go. So that's a good one. And then Michigan State, Maryland is also an 11:30 a.m. tip that will be Big Ten Network. Michigan State's almost certainly going to be safe. I think both teams are probably in. It's just, it could be a first four situation for the loser there. I wouldn't be surprised if that wound up being the case there. Keep an eye on that. St. John's versus Seton Hall at 3 o'clock on Thursday is an elimination game. Loser is not going to make the NCAA tournament. The winner is going to probably have to beat Villanova to start building a case there. I'd keep an eye on that. Boise State, bubble team, 5:30, CBS Sports Network on Thursday, playing Nevada in the Mountain West. I would highly advise winning that game if you're Boise State. Keep an eye on that. I would also highly advise 5:30, Pac-12 Network. UCLA plays Oregon State. UCLA's resume is not that strong. I hate to say it, GP, but it's true, and you know it. If the Bruins lose to Oregon State, there will be a real case to keep them out of the field. A win, and they're probably going to ultimately be safe. I would win two if I was UCLA to be absolutely secure. A loss to the Beavers, and the Beavers have done... The Beavers outplayed expectations to a certain extent this season. That's just one that you're going to want to keep an eye on there. I do think that happens to be a tricky one. Couple other Thursday tips to keep an eye on. I mean, we're just going to be basking in this stuff, people. If you're like me, you're absolutely in love with this week. Just the return of this. These are the games we did not get a year ago. Okay, this was the point on the calendar when it all shut down there. Indiana-Rutgers, 6:30, Big Ten Network, you know. Is Indiana done? I mean, are they going to lose here? The season's over. Again, I have no reason to believe that Indiana is parting ways with Archie Miller. I would not expect that to happen. Not that it's impossible. I'm just not anticipating that. And then a couple other games to keep an eye on. Texas Tech versus Texas is about a 9:30 tip on ESPN on Thursday night. That's clearly a pretty intriguing one. And then we'll have a litany of smaller conference tournament games going on. Thursday and Friday will be highly populated across the board. We await to see what the Friday matchups are. We don't know what they are yet, but that's your primer on the next couple of days if you're able to be at home watching daytime hoops and as we slowly but surely whittle the field and try and shrink the bubble on our way to Selection Sunday.
I'm fired up. I'm headed to the airport. Like, I'm running late. If we're
yeah, no, we got to wrap some.
The last time I was on a plane was March 11, 2020. I flew home from the CAA tournament. It's now March 10, 2021. Basically a year later, I'm getting on a plane and I cannot wait. Like, I'm going to check in to the hotel and I'm just going to go for a walk. I miss walking around the city. This is the longest I've gone in my adult life without being there. And so I'm looking forward to getting back. And then obviously the basketball should be terrific. Before we get out of here, I want to let you guys know about something we're going to be doing Monday. Deadleg and I are hosting a fun, interactive bracket engineer event. It's presented by Nissan, and you can be a part of it if you want to. It's going to be Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. And what it is an hour-long Zoom call where we're going to be discussing the bracket, discussing strategy, making picks, so on and so forth. Kenny Smith, TNT, going to join us, so that's awesome. And you can register right now to be a part of it. You just go to nissanbracketengineer.splashthat.com to register. It's nissanbracketengineer.splashthat.com. So go there, register. Again, it's Monday, 5 p.m. Eastern. Me, Deadleg, and Kenny the Jet Smith. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry, MF and Teagle legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again listening to the Eye on College Basketball Podcast. Middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Whew. Boy, it's been something. We're going to talk to you again on Friday morning. Till then, take care.
CBS. CBS Wednesday.
We have so many cool, diverse people from different backgrounds, different beliefs, different upbringings, and it just keeps growing.
I'm a citizen of the United States.
I'm a hustler.
I'm a big Taylor Swift fan.
I'm the queen of the tribe. I'm a
survivor. I am playing whatever role I gotta play.
I'm gonna play this game full speed.
I ain't going down like no punk.
A new Survivor, Wednesday on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.